In the name of God who creates us, redeems us, and sustains us. Amen. Be seated. I suspect that some of you are probably familiar with the story of Marietta Yeager. Her story has been told in any number of venues and books and news stories and documentaries. She's included in Desmond Tutu's No Future Without Forgiveness. Susie, Marietta's daughter, was abducted at the age of 7 while her family was on a camping trip in Montana. In the middle of the night, while everyone slept, Susie was taken. For over a year, Marietta and her family had no word of where Susie was, or of whether or not she was alive. As described on the website, Journey of Hope, an organization Marietta later helped organize, it's written, shortly before the one-year anniversary of Susie's disappearance, Marietta stated to the press that she wanted to speak with the person who had taken her child. On the anniversary date, she received a phone call. A call from a young man who taunted her by asking, "So what do you want to talk to me about?" During the year following Susie's disappearance, Marietta had struggled to balance her rage against her deep belief in the need for forgiveness. So her immediate response to the young man was to ask how he was feeling, since his actions must have placed a heavy burden on his soul. Her caring words disarmed him, and he broke down in tears on the phone. He subsequently spoke with Marietta for over an hour, revealing details about himself and about the crime that ultimately led to the FBI solving the case. Marietta was to learn that Susie had been killed on a remote Montana ranch a week after she disappeared. Despite her family's tragedy, she remains committed to forgiveness and has been an ardent opponent of the death penalty for over 35 years. It's a totally horrifying story. I can't even begin to imagine what she and her family must have gone through. But here's the grace in all that pain, in all that suffering. Listen to what Marietta had to say. Loved ones wrenched from our lives by violent crime deserve more beautiful, noble, and honorable memorials than premeditated, state-sanctioned killings. The death penalty only creates more victims, more grieving families. By becoming that which we deplore, people who kill people, we insult the sacred memory of all our most precious victims. Concerning the claim of justice for the victim's family, she continues, I say there is no amount of retaliatory deaths that could compensate me for the incredible value of my daughter's life, nor would they restore her to my arms. To say that the death of any person would be just retribution is an insult to the immeasurable worth of our loved ones who are victims. We cannot put a price on their lives. That kind of justice would only dehumanize us, degrade us, because it legitimates the animal instinct. My own daughter was such a gift of joy and sweetness and beauty, that to kill someone in her name would have been to violate, to profane the goodness of her very life. The idea is offensive and repulsive to me. Capital punishment degrades dehumanizes, debilitates us as a human society. I give you a new commandment, Jesus says, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Marietta Yeager's story is a compelling story to hear in the aftermath of the Boston bombings and the Newtown shootings. It's a story of someone whose sense of discipleship is so profound that she's been able to give up her own very natural, very human desire for revenge. Revenge against the man that took her 7-year-old daughter. And I want to be completely honest here. I cannot imagine doing as Marietta Yeager has done. The strength of her conviction is so far beyond my own that I am not even sure that I can bring myself to wish that I had such a commitment as this. A commitment to this commandment that Jesus lays upon us. The commandment to love. And that's what's going on in this morning's gospel. The commandment to love. Jesus didn't really give us much in the way of commandments. There are very few of them. But this is one of them. One of the very few real commandments that Jesus gave to us, his followers. Sometimes Jesus' words seem unclear, difficult to understand. But there's nothing in this gospel that is particularly unclear or ambiguous. It's a straightforward commandment. Love one another. A Jewish friend of mine, Brenda Rosenberg, used to say to me, a Jew is obligated to volunteer and to perform acts of charity. It's not optional. Likewise, I suppose I could say that of today's reading for those who follow Jesus. The commandment to love is not optional. The commandment to love is a demand. Love one another, Jesus says, not when it's easy, not when it's unambiguous, not when it's the logical thing to do, just clear. Love one another. I'll admit, few of us are going to be able to walk out of here this morning and practice that kind of love, the kind that we heard about in the story of Marietta Yeager. I know myself well enough to know that I'm not likely to feel much love for a murderer. I'm not likely soon to feel love for a man who killed a daughter. But how I feel and what I do are two different things. There's a difference between an attitude and having a practice. Breen Brown, a sociologist and public speaker, talks about what people have sort of talked about as having an attitude for gratitude. For years, she writes, I subscribe to the notion of an attitude of gratitude. I've since learned that an attitude is an orientation or way of thinking, and that having an attitude doesn't necessarily translate into behavior. Brown continues. For example, it would be reasonable to say I have a yoga attitude. The ideals and beliefs that guide my life are very much in line with the ideas and belief that one could associate with yoga. I value mindfulness. I value breathing. I value the body-mind-spirit connection. I even have yoga outfits, she says. But let me assure you that my yoga attitude and outfits don't mean jack if you put me on a yoga mat and then ask me to stand on my head or to strike a pose. Where it really matters, on the mat, my yoga attitude doesn't count for much. What matters, Brown maintains, is not so much the attitude as the practice. I may have an attitude to love, but that doesn't really matter. What matters is that I have a practice to love. So whether or not I feel love for that other person really doesn't mean that much at all. What matters is how I treat that other person. What matters is how I act toward that other person. What matters is that I practice loving that person, even if I don't like it, even if I don't want to. And of course, generally speaking, if I act in a loving manner, there might come to a point where I actually feel in a loving manner as well. But that's just gravy. And the grace in all of this, ultimately, is to remember that God doesn't call us to succeed. God asks us to practice, to try. So even when we don't love, it doesn't mean we aren't loved. Even when we fail, we can rest assured that we are still prized, valued, cherished, loved by God. Jesus said, "I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." May it be so someday. Amen.
Amen.